yellow spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Introductory music provided by purpleplanet.com. This is a tune called Prohibition Blues. Welcome back to Where the Most Light Falls, an audio literary journal. I am DJ Tamara, and I'll be your host for the next hour. If you'd like to get in touch with me during or after the show, I'm on Facebook at tamaramiles.poet and on Twitter at tamaramilessc. I am honored to know many talented people, and on today's show, I'd like to introduce you to some poetry and stories, and some music also, in addition to our primary music, which will be Nocturnes by Chopin. We will be featuring some other special pieces of music. My plan is to include John Guzlowski, Melissa Steffi, Selene Charles, Mark Burns, Ann Bridges, Brian Burmeister, N.J. Crosskey, Andrew Spence, Michelle Moon Speck, and maybe some others if I can squeeze them in before the hour is over. If not, we'll catch them next time. I always throw in a few of my own poems and thoughts as well. And this is my plan, but my plan is flexible, and I have open books and magazines in front of me that may suddenly demand to be read. I may turn to the immediate poetry of life happening on Twitter around the clock. This show is dedicated to my mother, who died in March of 2007. And I have to warn you, this show has some parts that will break your heart. They break mine too. But we read and listen because it helps us remember the whole of humanity. And I hope it makes us better people. And I hope it helps us to love each other better. Let me start the Chopin Nocturnes, as played by Brigitte Angerer. Let me introduce you to John Guzlowski, and I'll share an article by Michael Meyerhofer, just a piece of the article about John. This is from the Atticus Review. John Guzlowski is one of those contemporary poets that you strangely hope the person you're talking to hasn't heard of, just so that you can suggest they check him out and thus earn their undying gratitude. I'm not just referring to the heartbreaking honesty of John's work. He also happens to be one of those rare poets who can maintain emotional resonance even when he's pushing the boundaries of his own style. I think what draws me most to John's poetry is how it manages to critique the human condition without coming across as preachy and heavy-handed, and even more importantly, without losing its connection to those primal elements that make poetry worth reading in the first place. Just take a look at A Tale of Teeth and Death, a chilling fable that resonates with more truth than any of those countless Sunday school lessons from my youth. Humor became the lies we tell our mothers, John writes, and suddenly I want to fly back to my mother's grave and beg her forgiveness. I was surprised by this poem, A Tale of Teeth and Death, when I came across it as I was preparing to share John's poems, because I wrote a poem recently called The First Protest Movement, which features a little girl and her first tooth coming in. I had read about how in the 1860s, teething was often listed as a cause of death. So I'm intrigued by John's poem, A Tale of Teeth and Death. These teeth are sharp, made of stone and wire. The first men used them to kill the first women. Sorrow then descended like sundown on the sweet world. Wisdom became violence. Humor became the lies we tell our mothers. Killing made the killing men lighter, feathers in the hands of their friends. Killing made the dying women heavier, a chain of words in the hands of their friends. This is what the words of the dying women said. Tell them we have met on the plains of summer and left there what we loved most, the smiling babies, the full wooden bowls. John Gislowski's writing appears in Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac, Rattle, Ontario Review, North American Review, Salon.com, Atlanta Review, and many other print and online journals here and abroad. His poems and personal essays about his parents' experiences as slave laborers in Nazi Germany and refugees making a life for themselves in Chicago appear in his prose and poetry memoir, Echoes of Tattered Tongues. Road of Bones, his novel about two German lovers separated by war, is forthcoming from Cervena Barva Press. Of Gislowski's writing, Nobel laureate Czesław Miłosz said, "He has an astonishing ability for grasping reality." Let's hear two more of John's staggering poems. My mother was 19. Soldiers from nowhere came to my mother's farm, killed her sister's baby with their heels, shot my grandma too, one time in the neck, then for kicks in the face lots of times. They saw my mother. They didn't care she was a virgin, dressed in a blue dress with tiny white flowers. Raped her so she couldn't stand up, couldn't lie down, couldn't talk. They broke her teeth when they shoved the dress in her mouth. If they had a camera, they would have taken her picture and sent it to her. That's the kind they were. Let me tell you, God doesn't give you any favors. He doesn't say, now you've seen this bad thing, but tomorrow you'll see this good thing, and when you see it, you'll be smiling. That's bullshit. And this poem is called Grief. My mother cried for a week, first in the boxcars, then in the camps. Her friends said, Tekla, don't cry. The Germans will shoot you and leave you in the field. But she couldn't stop. Even when she had no more tears, she cried. Cried the way a dog will gulp for air when it's choking on a stick or some bone it's dug up in a garden and swallowed. The woman in charge gave her a cold look and knocked her down with her fist like a man, and then told her if she didn't stop crying, she would call the guard to stop her crying. But my mother couldn't stop. The howling was something loose in her. Nothing could stop. Now let me read a passage from an article called Hooked at Birth by Fran Smith in National Geographic. This is from September 2017. Babies going through opioid withdrawal have a distinct way of crying, a short, anguished, high-pitched wail repeated over and over. It echoes through the neonatal therapeutic unit of Cabell Huntington Hospital in Huntington, West Virginia. A week-old girl has been at it inconsolably since 6 o'clock in the morning. At 10 o'clock, Sarah Murray, the unit's soft-spoken, no-nonsense nurse manager, sighs. "This may be a frustrating day," she says. These babies, on that day there were 23, were trying to overcome the powerful effects of addictive drugs on the brain. At the end of the day, the nurse took in her arms a 41-day-old boy and placed a green pacifier in his mouth. And here's what Fran Smith says about that moment. "While he sucks like a piston, fast and hard, she cradles him firmly and sways almost imperceptibly. Soon his jaw relaxes, his eyelids flutter, and he drifts off to sleep." I'll read for you next a poem by Selene Charles, "Woes of Early Spring." Bending low, daffodil slumps her shoulders. The weight of the season, frigid and white, glistening in clumps at her feet. Winter's bejeweled accessory tossed to the earth, symbolic of her arrogance, her inability to see the meek as they climb to meet the sun. Too soon they stirred in warming soils, stripped from dormancy, rich hues in a naked world. No return from whence they came, and so they bend low, while winter receives her final curtsies and praises. Icy fingers applaud her finish. And daffodil bends low, burying her shame. You can find Selene Charles on Facebook. She has a wonderful blog about being a writer. She gives some excellent advice. Check her out. Next, I'd like to read a poem by my friend, Anne Bridges, who lives in the Netherlands. Ann and I met in Dublin in April of 2016. It's my great pleasure to spend some time with her, talking in a couple of pubs. Ann did not know that this poem was a poem when she wrote it. It's called Price Tags, and she posted it in an online group of which we are both members. It's a creativity group called the Curiosity Salon. And she wrote this as a post. Price tags. This weekend, I'm opening my living room for a sale. Today, I may have sold the stereo, a standing lamp, some Tupperware, and got rid of some files for free. I get into long, deep conversations with people I meet for the first time. It's a little unnerving and scary, but seems to be the way my life's going. Today I was told that I am a light worker. I've heard of them. Danielle Laporte talks of being one, but never considered I'd fall into that category. Interesting, mind-blowing, scary stuff. The clutter, though, is clearing. The stuff is getting packed, and the removals men have second appointments in 2 weeks to see if they can give me better prices. Ann Bridges is a bilingual, creative, lateral thinker who considers deeply, eats off the beaten track, values friendship, and takes time for others. Walking and talking, visiting windmills, sharing hummus, crackers, and the humor of situations. She will unwittingly get a laugh at some point in a conversation. Drawn to animals and plants, she's planning to move her pots before her belongings. Next, we'll hear a poem by Melissa Steffi. And I'm going to have her read it. This is her from her SoundCloud account. And the poem is called Adagio e Passante.
Adagio e Passante. I create my life in the spaces between reality where things actually seem to work. It's quite poetic, really, when you find what unbreaks your heart, even more so when it cannot be the thing that unbreaks your heart. I do. I am. Happy. I have the same moments as everyone else, but the brokenness is an aching hurt. The wound is sore, and the salve that soothes will not grace the step of my door. It is the sweetest, saddest dirge, with moments of adagio e passante, and the momente accelerando con amore. It is contrary, yes. Obstinate, yes. Going against rule and convention. And surrender, because that is all I can do with love anymore. Surrender.
And I'll have one more poem by Melissa. I'll read this one. I told her this poem had come to me at exactly the right time. She posted it in our group. Home. Breathe. Stop and feel. Just be. Listen to your body. Tell the mind to go for a rest. Just believe that it will be all right. That is the true test. As your heart breaks, let it give it the room to grieve. It is all temporary except the spark, except the part you know. Believe in the things you know to be, not those nagging doubts, not those that want you to follow their path. Follow your own. Own your own. Find home. Melissa Steffi expresses herself with transparency, raw and open to the light and shadow. Returning to writing in October of 2015, she has explored the heights and depths of life, from love and bliss to loss and grief, everything in between and beyond. Her first book of poetry is called Big Sky, Broken Hearts, and it is available on Amazon. I'm going to share a poem now by my first cousin, Michelle Moon Speck, who is so kind and sends me cards on a regular basis. She sent me one, in fact, on the anniversary of my mother's death this month, and sent a tender note about remembering the good things. Here's her poem called Sitting by My North Facing Window. Sitting by my north facing window, the cares of life buzzing in my head. Why am I here, I ponder. Snowflakes flutter around. Noises are deafening in this quiet house. What to do, when, where, and how? I hardly notice the wonder. Snowflakes fluttering around. Job questions clutter my mind, relationships and such. Everything clouds my thinking. Snowflakes flutter around. Something red catches my eye, a beautiful cardinal against the snowflakes tumbling down. The noises seem to fade except the popping of the fire nearby. Life is tangible, I realize. My mind beginning to settle. My vision is clearing to finally see the snowflakes flutter around. Michelle is a mother to three and grandmother to two who remembers always attempting to write even as a young teen. Went to college in her mid-40s to earn degrees in social work and registered nursing, proving it is never too late for an education. Just a lot harder. Her hobbies include cooking, visiting family, reading, and the continued attempt to write. I told you earlier that I met Ann Bridges in Dublin. Before I headed off to Ireland, I wrote a poem about how I was longing to go there. It's called What I Was Looking For. Yesterday, at the antiques and knockabout store, I'd barely made it through the door when I found Flaubert and Tolstoy lounging on a shelf. I also found myself in a cowboy hat, making a donkey puppet bray at bric-a-brac and 1920s dolls who played in long pink satin dresses. I touched a painted face and golden tresses. A peacock watched me from stained glass as I admired a Remington poster with a gun-toting lass and secretly wished myself Annie Oakley, best in trick shot class. 10 parrots hung from ceiling hooks. I saw many fine and dusty books. A rare and lovely pearl buck edition, red cover, meant for erudition. I wanted to buy it, but I didn't. 10 Nights in a Bar Room sang out from atop the other records, but I couldn't remember the right words because the whole time in the antique store, I thought of something I wanted more than red ruby plates and a brown mink coat. I wanted to take a sailing boat or plane to a country known by Irish Jane and set my feet down on that shore. I wanted nothing more, except for maybe that cowboy hat, because I did look cute in that. Let me read you a story by someone I met on Twitter. Her name is N.J. Crosskey. And the story is called Bad Loser. It was published by Postcard Shorts. Postcard Shorts publishes microfiction, diverting short stories for you to read, share, and enjoy. The story called Bad Loser. It was only a game. It was supposed to be a mere distraction from the tedium of the long summer day. But Tommy's face contorted in blind rage as he launched the chipped marbles at poor old Rusty, who had been chewing on his own hind leg, oblivious to the brewing storm. I got off lightly, a slight bruise on my arm from a hurtling cat's eye. Rusty took one on the nose, which caused him to howl. I watched with a mixture of fascination and disbelief as Tommy ranted, pulled his hair, spat expletives, and finally stomped off home. Clearly, the perceived indignity of being beaten by a girl was not enough for him, and he felt the need to add to his humiliation by letting his devil-may-care facade slip and his true colors come spilling out from the cracks. I never played with Tommy again. I kept my distance, but many of the local girls played with him during their adolescence. He seemed to win those games, which suited him. They ended with smeared makeup and confessions to besties over cheap cider. Many a pub toilet heard the cold comfort counsel of, "He's not good enough for you anyway." The girls always lost, but still lined up to be picked next. Eventually, he played with someone who beat him, or cheated, I know not which. He threw more than marbles that day. I saw the black car procession passed through the town center a few days after the sirens had come for Tommy. I wonder if perhaps I should have told her of that summer day long ago, but I doubt she would have listened. Postcard Shorts is open to all genres of flash fiction. They're looking for original material, about 250 words or so, as much as you could more or less fit on a postcard if you wrote really small. N.J. Crosskey is an author, mother, and prolific coffee drinker from West Sussex, England. She juggles writing with working night shifts and raising her two children. She started writing seriously in 2014 when her daughter's love of writing rekindled her own childhood ambitions. She is represented by the literary agency Emily Sweet Associates in London. I found NJ on Twitter because I noticed her post about her 8-year-old. This is what she wrote. "My 8-year-old is working on his novel. After every sentence, he says, 'Hell yeah, this is amazing.' then moonwalks around the room, singing a verse or two from Smooth Criminal before continuing to type. I can't help but think his process is way cooler than mine. Let's hear a little bit of Smooth Criminal in honor of NJ's son. That's always a fun piece. Let me read you a poem called Broad River Alone. I live in Columbia, South Carolina, and we have some beautiful rivers, the Broad River, the Congaree, the Edisto River. And this is just my brief thoughts one day when I was out by the Broad River. The river in pre-summer, cold to take my breath, alerts me to the swift threat of sudden death, a drowning among rocks, observed by the beaver from his domain of mud and straw. He sees it all. Turtle, occupant of sun space, draws away his puzzled face. This was originally published by Thin Air magazine. It's called Grayscale. A month after Mom passed, I went back to the house to pack up. In the corner of her closet, buried under a pile of shoes, was a box within a box. Inside were dozens of aged black and white photos of my mother with a man I didn't know. There were no letters, no notes on the back of the photos, nothing to indicate who they were of or when they were from. I wondered, did my father know she was happy once? second poem by Brian Burmeister. It's called Paper Words. In this poem, he will use the term IDP, and I wasn't sure if everyone would be familiar with that. So the term is referring to an internally displaced person, someone who is forced to flee his or her home but remains within his or her country's borders. They are often referred to as refugees, although they do not fall within the legal definitions of a refugee. And I was reading that definition from Wikipedia. Paper Words by Brian Burmeister. On July 12th, Sarah wrote home to her parents. In a different IDP camp, there was confusion. Word spread that some were being moved, which was true. But the gossip was quick and panicked and evolving. Within one day, there became great belief that those being moved were being taken to Europe. When the cars and jeeps pulled into their line, mothers swarmed the cars with their children, holding them out, thrusting them out, and where windows were open, throwing them through the space between metal and glass, chanting, "Take my baby, take my baby." It took 2 or 3 hours that day for the children to be returned, and for all that were there to know no one, not one, was going to Europe. Just 20 miles further west to some place not good, save for better supplies. Each week, Sarah wrote to her parents like this, of the things she heard and not what she saw, as if the 2 steps of separation from parents to action would allow them to place her into the role of storyteller, not daughter. Paper Words was originally published by 805 Lit plus Art. Brian Burmeister teaches communication at Iowa State University. His writing has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize and Best of the Net, and he is a regular contributor at Cleaver Magazine. He can be followed on Twitter at BD Burmeister. I've shared a lot today about suffering families, and especially about suffering children who are caught up in our wars and in our addictions and the other ways that we destroy ourselves and each other. So I thought it was appropriate today to share with you a different kind of lullaby, a lullaby that speaks to us of the darkness. On Twitter, I found a beautiful haiku. It was posted by Joyce Budenberg, but it was written by Safu Ni. Shown a flower, the small baby opens its mouth. This poem is by Alan Mitner. It's called Go Now. Too long here. The walls of this room turned to bone, my smile no more than phantom teeth, and the smoke from dead candlelight just won't leave. While the sky falls blue on blue, I could sail to where your open windows smell like apple, your door the first tree beyond the sand. You can find Alan on Twitter at Alan Loves Poetry. That rather terrifying lullaby is from The Witcher 3 soundtrack. Now I'd like to read some poems by Andrew Spence. We'll begin with one called At the Golden Elephant. So cold, soon after the chestnut tree died, I walked oil puddle lighted alleys to find great jazz shows, smooth buttered bread, and chipped wine glasses. Girls love red velvet booths, dark light to shadow their string bass, and sultry cupcakes. Trumpet blaring, incense lit rendezvous, first coffee at the Golden Elephant, slow down beat to catch the espresso machine mechanics, smile underneath coffee ground grease stains. At the Golden Elephant, there are 101 different caffeine combinations, but none of the interest from college student crowdfunding. Every combination is a bitter fertilizer of creativity that only flowers when the brain shuts down, enough faculties to function in half days. The marble pillars are really made of concrete. The pearls inlaid on floors are synthetic, really. The only thing natural at the Golden Elephant is the coffee. Elephant memorabilia, mass-produced surplus of ivory bought in the black market superstores of Africa. There is an android in the back room teaching the baristas how to upsell using a digital memory bank chock full of self-help, how-to, so you wanna be books, /back/. Crazy antenna-wearing, blue-eyed computer boss man flying automated plates with formulaic balance equalizer machines. Not a single Frapper Extra Kappa Killer caffeine blaster drop spilled. Andrew Spence is a broken hurricane of nonsense waiting to crash onto the beach of your boredom. 25 years old and currently residing in Denver, Colorado, Spence first grew up in Midwestern Ohio suburbia before he fell in love with mountain hikes. Recently graduated in the fields of Asian studies and English education, Andrew's poems often reflect his experiences abroad, intermingled between the beautiful and sometimes disturbing images of being a lifelong learner in a world so quick to teach him a lesson. Andrew makes a hobby out of poetry, skateboards, alcohol, and book collecting. He knows very well that he wouldn't be anywhere without his monthly calendar with pictures of basset hounds and late-night longboard rides full of self-loathing. Second poem by Andrew is called Image, and it was published in Aberration Labyrinth. I got an image, back button pressed against the front of my eyelids. I'm staring at the front of a telescreen. I'm going down. I am burning books and asking where I can buy a copy online. I need more time to be alive. I need more time for being lifeless, holding technology in the palm of my hand, pressing the hand warmers in my pockets against the wires. There is nothing more interesting. The human genome computerized. This gentleness, but sometimes there's a need to protest the wrongs in the world demand to be confronted. We've seen it happen this week with the young people marching for gun control, for change. I'd like to share a piece by my friend Mark Burns. It's called Enough. Enough of this, the meek will inherit the earth. Who can tell me of meek hedge fund managers, or robber barons, or media tycoons? The unforgivable nonsense they spoon our mouths wide open, begging, feed us, please. Corporate officers, military merchants, decadent dividers of all Earth's wealth. These are the inheritors, the gilded hoarders that board up your care homes, your libraries, your constituted laws, with no care, no thought. Less is more only when serving us. The meek do not inherit the earth. The weak work the earth, plowing profitable furrows for a chosen few who spew their visible contempt, who laugh in the face of middle-class grace. Then turn your mind to petty crimes so you despise the person who is the next rung down from you. Jesus, brother, I dig your teaching from that hardscrabble mount, but it's they who double their count. They took your air, your water, your land, and all that was on it and in it. They will never be finished. Mark Burns is a poet and writer in Northern Ireland. You may know him as a freelance arts journalist based in Derry, in Londonderry. His works have been published in Culture Northern Ireland and other venues, and we in South Carolina are proud to have one of his poems in the 2016 edition of Fall Lines, a literary journal produced with the University of South Carolina. Mark has a number of works in progress, including performance poetry, short stories, and he is an occasional radio host. I'm going to play a special piece of music today for my mother. It's called Song for My Mother by Molly Pardon.
Just turn. Don't you forget the way home.
I wish you could see the end of this video. The girl comes back home. And I'm glad. We've reached the end of another show. There's so much more I want to tell you, so I'll meet you back here next time. After the show today, if you'll hang around for a few minutes, I have an interview with Betty Benz, a friend who has had a film accepted for the Indie Grits Festival. Thanks. Blessings, everybody. Caught in the dark with the radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. A special guest with me today, my friend Betty Benz, who has created a short film for the Indie Grits Festival, and I'm so proud of her and proud to have her with me today to tell you about the festival and about her piece and a little background to a program called Girls Rock. Hey, Betty.
Hey, Tamara. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I guess a little bit about Girls Rock before I start talking about the documentary. I was involved in an experience with a volunteer showcase with Girls Rock Columbia. Girls Rock Columbia is a nonprofit organization, and what they do is they help develop positive, honest, and powerful voices within the community. And the particular showcase fundraiser I was involved in involved being randomly grouped in a band, so you would submit mm-hmm. your name to Girls Rock by email. They would put you in a band, and you could request an instrument, but you may or may not get it, and then so you have basically a month, sometimes 2 months, to meet with your band and create a song or two. So it's a...
Sounds so wonderful.
It's a really exciting opportunity, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful to have a deadline, because sometimes these are the sorts of things that you're like, gosh, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what it is, don't know how to turn out, but... You
push forward.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The
yeah.
deadline is helpful. And so we had this space to basically start exploring our voices, exploring our skills. And so I just set up cameras and decided to record our experience over this month.
That's so fantastic.
And so it showed us going through the process of, well, just figuring out and asking the question of, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we
Why are we
here?
Doing it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What we want. And I think what was really interesting is how we all had our own reasons
mm-hmm.
for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it was to be able to work with the camp that they sponsor
mm-hmm.
and to be able to guide the campers better by actually going through the same band process that they ask the campers
right.
to go through in
mm-hmm.
the summer. Some people wanted to, I guess, explore their own artistic abilities, or just asking what I can do in general terms, which was more me. I have yet to volunteer directly for the camp, even though I support Girls Rock. Others were kind of thinking just in terms of expression and their role in the communities and what it means to be someone in the community, how they view themselves. So it was a variety of people and a variety of purposes coming mm-hmm. together to make music.
Oh, it sounds so wonderful. And tell us when it is again, the festival, please.
It's in April. I think it's the weekend, maybe 13th, 14th, 15th.
So okay, and how do we attend? Is this local? Can we watch it on?
Yeah, it's in Columbia, and okay. So you would go to the Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. and you can buy tickets online. And there are so many interesting films that are being shown, and so many musical events. It's not just film festival. There are a variety of things that you can do.
Fantastic.
Explore it online, Nickelodeon Indie Grits Film Festival.
Thanks so much, Betty.
Sure. Thank you.